Welcome to Butler County Commission meeting. Please join us for the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer by Reverend John Sloan.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father God, we are so grateful that you have loved us and blessed us. You've been good to our community. You've been good to us collectively and individually. Now help us that we would live our lives to your honor in integrity and with love for one another. In the name of our Lord, I pray. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. We will begin today's meeting with communications.
First would it be approve the minutes from the September 14th meeting, approve travel and training, approve pay adjustment for Administrative Secretary of Personnel Department, exchange bonds for Keener Metals Block B, advertise for bids for contract number 6-5M under the county engineer, under finance, do transfers and appropriations, accept two estimated certificates of estimated resources. Under miscellaneous, approve and execute a contract with Fifth Third Bank for rehabilitation fund services. Execute contract with Motorola for the 800 megahertz public safety radio system. Hold number 11 for later. Execute agreement with Hamilton County for jail space, contingent on final negotiation. Appoint outside legal counsel and approve and execute 07 Ohio coordination program with ODOT.
No changes or alterations. I move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think with the item number 11, the appointment of Children's Services Board Review Task Force, like to move that we approve this resolution and like to, I think, read it. I think it'd be good if we write it. And then announce the members of the board. Is that all right with my colleagues?
Yes.
Resolution creating an independent task force to examine the provision of children's services in Butler County and to make recommendation as to the form of children's services agency which best fits the needs of Butler County. Whereas in the wake of the untimely death of Marcus Faisal, the Butler County Board of Commissioners finds that the creation of an independent group to consider certain matters which have arisen and to make recommendations to the board thereon no later than December 11, 2006, is appropriate. And now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Butler County, Ohio, that Section 1, the board charges the task force with investigating, considering, answering the following questions and providing the basis for its answers no later than December 11, 2006. A, is the current Butler County Children's Services Board governance structure of an independent board adequately addressing the needs of children and families? B. Are the policies, practices, programs, and resource allocation correctly prioritized and structured to promote excellence in child protection? C. Are the culture, practices, policies, and programs of CSB conducive to achieving excellence in collecting, analyzing, evaluating, and acting on and moving the necessary information to decision makers in a timely manner? D. Are the internal and external accountability systems sufficient to promote excellence in achieving the goals of openness, scrutiny, and responsiveness to the needs of families, children, allied agencies, and stakeholders and the public? E. What are the potential benefits and risks of reorganizing the CSB? F. What effect would the different organizational administrative options have on our access to funding and efficiencies that could result in savings? G. What are other practices, policies, programs, actions should be adopted or taken to improve the performance of the Children's Services Program? Section 2. The board charges the task force with making a recommendation to the board no later than December 11, 2006 on the following question. RC 5153.02 provides, each county shall have a public children's service agency. Any of the following may be the Public Children's Services Agency: A, a County Children's Services Board; B, a County Department of Job and Family Services; C, a private or governmental entity designated under Section 307.981 of the Revised Code. What form of public children's service agency does the task force recommend will best fit the needs of Butler County? Section 3. In investigating, considering, and determining the questions and making its recommendations, the task force should interview such persons as will competently assist the board with its charge, including but not limited to current and former employees of Butler County Children's Services Board, the various Butler County public system directors, other pertinent professionals, representatives from other counties, as well as surveying persons who have had contact with the CSB to ascertain their assessment of the agency's programs, practices, policies, and performance. Section 4. The expense of the task force shall be borne by the Butler County Department of Jobs and Family Services, which will, to the extent permitted by law, provide clerical support, office and meeting space, and other logistical support as needed. Section 4. The attached listing of persons are appointed to the task force, with Mr. Hare serving as chairman. The members of the task force being appointed today: Mr. Dan Hare, who is superintendent in the Butler County School System; Laura Jollis, COO of ACT; Captain Katie McMahon, Butler County Sheriff's Office; Ron DeFafanio, Mayor of the City of Fairfield; Bill Morrison, Butler County Children's Services Ombudsman; Carla Fear, of Hamilton; and Gene Campbell, also of Hamilton, who's a foster parent. With this resolution, we begin the process of determining the best direction for our children's services and protecting the children of Butler County. And I ask for a second.
Move to approve, or second.
Suggest some additional language on page 2 of 3. I don't know if it was intended to limit. When we get to the charge to the maybe I wanted to make sure that it's broad. After they've done their investigation, the task force shall make — this is on the part about the ORC, and this is just a drafting issue.
Mm-hmm.
5153.02, where you say the task force shall make a recommendation to the board on which form the public children's service agency mm-hmm. defines investing, and on such other matters it deems appropriate to improve the quality of protection for children in the care and jurisdiction of the Children Services Agency.
I kind of was assumed, but yeah.
I'm not following. Yeah, I mean, right. Just
I'll get that wording from you afterwards, but yeah. Okay. So it's been moved and second. Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
And that's with the
with your change.
Suggested language.
Correct. Any discussion?
No. Mr. President?
Yes.
I've asked that we can add a conversation with the person who's a former ombudsman for the Children's Services Agency. And in the course of the discussion, came across a number of issues. I think it would be helpful for the commission as we launch this independent review to get a sense of the benefit, if you will, of her experience and observations. And I've asked her to come this morning and basically share with us some things that we might consider as we go forward. And I've also asked that if she will serve as a resource, and I think that it's probably helpful if we contact the other folks that have been involved both inside and outside the board to serve as a resource for the review board we just appointed. But I've asked Sherry Lynch if she would come and spend some time with us this morning.
Sherry?
Yep. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here because I was led to believe that all three of you were in agreement that I come to speak with you, and that you have some questions for me.
Well, I when I talked to you, you thought that I said they all three thought?
Yes, I thought that you all knew that I was coming.
I don't have a problem with it, but I wasn't aware.
Okay, that's fine.
I was aware of it at 8 o'clock news this morning.
But she had offered to, she had talked to you, yeah. You talked to Commissioner Jolivet some time ago.
I did, right. And I offered.
And you offered to come before the commission.
I don't have any problem with it. I just didn't realize that you were coming this morning.
And when you asked him if you'd come, do you recall what he said?
That there was a board that was responsible for the children's services and that the board should be responsible for looking into the matter and taking into consideration what needed to be done.
And that was the CSB board.
That's correct.
Yeah. And in fact, that's why I asked her to come here, is that I do have a number of questions that I think will be enlightening to all of us and also give a sense of, because one of the issues that we're dealing with, as Commissioner Jolivet just pointed out, is the governance structure. Let me start with the premise that I think we all basically, in terms of the ideal way it should work, is to what, you know, what we had hoped to get some time ago, really, and before Greg and Chuck were commissioners, before I was a commissioner. The Children's Services Board was born in the wake of the death of two children, Tiffany Hubbard and Tim Tutt. At that time, I was a legislator, Janet Clemens was an activist here in the community, and came together, and one of the issues that concerned both of us, there were two issues. One was it really diligent in its effort to protect children? And the idea that was a combined agency, as the resolution points out, there are three ways to organize children's services agencies. You can have a standalone, you can have a combined, and you can have a children's services board. To my knowledge, no county in the state has a standalone, but it's about evenly split or whatever between combined and independent boards. We felt at that time an independent board would be the best for a couple of reasons. One, we thought that if they were informed, we did not believe at that time the commissioners were getting the right story about what was going on. And further, the commissioners kind of had a problem because it's hard for commissioners to say, gee, we really screwed up because of the political consequences. So we thought if we had a separate board sitting out here, it would like depoliticize it, so to speak, and more likely be focused on protecting children. The second thing that happened, interestingly enough, if you read the Inquirer here in the last few days, you see that Hamilton County is just cited on an audit. They have to pay back $248 million in monies to the state. Some of the findings in that audit were similar to what was going on back then, 20 years ago, which the county would bring money in under the pretense of helping children. And then it would kind of go into the commingled fund, and the monies would get lost in the mix, and children would suffer, but other places would benefit. And that's what Hamilton County is accused of. One of the things they're accused of in the audit is that they basically took money on behalf of children and spent it elsewhere. And we thought by walling it off, that would protect those funds. And the third factor at that time was we really needed to get a Children's Services levy passed, and we thought that would help it. Specifically, the premise of having an independent board was this. If you have an independent board of well-meaning people, which I believe we have and have always had, if you give them the right information at the right time, they will act on it, that there'll be some, that they will have a governance over the board that is different than if the commissioners were to do it. As time went on, we realized that system somehow broke down because there were horrendous cases that occurred, the Billings case and many other cases, that the board apparently had no knowledge of. And the idea that the board would have knowledge and therefore be able to act was kind of killed by the idea that they could only act on things they knew about. And it was clear that the director at that time, Dr. McEnidge, just basically walled off information from the board. And it was hard to expect them to act. As a result of that and what we learned how serious the consequences of that were about 1998 when we learned of the Billings case, thankfully due to the work of a detective of all places in San Diego. She's the one that came back and said, hey, you got a problem here. The board at the time, even in spite of learning that, in spite of learning how big the problem was, still resisted holding the folks inside the agency accountable for it. And that's why the three commissioners at that time, including Commissioner Furman and I and Commissioner Combs, said, we've had it. We're going to fire you. We're firing all of you. We're asking for your resignations. And it went down, if you remember Commissioner Furman, we had to even have a, they were so resistant that five of them, including our state representative, one of our state representatives, Sean Webster, sat in the room to see, they didn't know what Corky Combs was going to do on the amendment, on the, because Chuck and I went out first on it. And they sat in the room to see if Corky, who was notorious for wiggling, was going to vote for it. And when he made the motion, they asked for a recess so they could go back and huddle, and then they submitted their resignations rather than have the commission dissolve the board. Now, I tell that story is the history and the culture of this agency was so resistant to oversight, even in the face of one of the most horrible failures in the history of any children's services agency, where we were sending children into the home of a pedophile and he was making pornographic movies sodomizing these children, that even having known that and finding out that their executive director that they were working with had known that all the way back when it started in 1987 and had never told the board, they still did not want to let that person go. Now, it's against that backdrop that I asked you to come today, because you have had the experience of looking inside the agency. And as you know, one of my key pieces is information. We believe, as Commissioner Jolivet expressed to you, that, look, we've got a Children's Services Board. It's their job. We want to trust them to oversee the operations of that agency. We believe that they're good, meaning, and dedicated and committed people. They spend hundreds of hours a year of their time on behalf of children. But we also, and so we believe they're getting the information. Now, you were the ombudsman. The reason the ombudsman was created in the wake of the Billings knowledge was, said, we got to create an independent channel to take information to the board. And the theory was, if they've got this information, they'll act on it. And I'd like to just ask you, with against that backdrop, in terms of the cultural issues, during your time there and so forth, were there times when, first off, how long were you there, approximately?
About 15 months.
What's the date?
I believe I began on August the 23rd, 2004, and left October 28th, 2005.
During that time, did you make reports to the board?
Yes, sir, every month.
And what types of things would be in those reports?
I would report on the, in general public session, I would report on the number of cases that came before the ombudsman. And in executive session, I was asked to report on the particulars. Those were done maintaining the confidentiality of the family. In other words, names were not named, but the case was outlined, what my findings and recommendations were. And that was
even
done
in
every
executive session. You didn't use names?
No.
And in the executive session meetings, would you get into, except for the names, the specific details of the cases?
Yes, when they were relevant to my findings. So I would summarize the case and my case findings. I'd make the finding, you know, that I found that, you know, this particular complainant's complaint was valid or invalid. And then I would write recommendations where recommendations were forthcoming.
There were never any restrictions placed on you as to what questions you could ask, of whom you could ask them, what reports you would make to the board. No one ever told you not to bring something to the board.
No one ever told me not to, although I do recall a case towards the end of my tenure which contributed to my decision. I mean, this was not the only reason, but there were many reasons, and this contributed to it in that I had asked for a report done by one of the individuals within the organization with regard to a particular case, and that was not provided to me. I asked several times, including of the executive director, and was forced at that point then to go to the president of the board to get that particular report. And finally, that report was forthcoming.
After you talked to the president of the board?
Correct.
And when you first got there, one of the things that we talked about, that in terms of the vision of the ombudsman, was that be able to ask any questions, get any information, so forth, so it could be a conduit of information to the board. And in fact, you were originally participating in normal management, the management team meetings that occurred periodically. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what went on at those meetings?
They were generally information giving. In other words, the executive director would give a pieces of information that had to do with the operations of the organization, and would ask for the department directors to say what's going on recently in their particular department.
And at that time, did you think that those were useful meetings to attend?
Well, in general, I'd like to say that I think meetings spent in giving information are probably, unless they're accompanied by discussion or problem solving, are probably a waste of time. We've got ways that we can give information to people that they can read, and that meetings in general should be problem-solving opportunities where you really need the folks to see each other and speak to one another and openly problem-solve. So in my opinion, no, I don't think it's helpful just to give information. I think there are other ways of doing it.
Does problem-solving discussions occur?
From time to time.
And were you ever asked not to stop attending those meetings?
Yes, I was asked not to attend those meetings. At one point, the board decided that I was to be very limited rather than broad in my role of ombudsman, and I was asked not to attend regular management meetings.
And that was direct, you were directed not to attend those meetings by whom?
By the board.
By the board?
Mm-hmm.
And did they give you a reason for not wanting you there?
I believe it has to do with their belief that I think as they saw it, I was interfering with the role of the executive director.
Now, did they ever tell you interfering in what way?
No, there were no specifics.
On the cases that you'd look at,
mm-hmm.
there was some particular cases that struck your attention. One of which we talked here at the commission meeting some weeks ago about the Talbert House contract. And there was a grievance on a case involving that contract.
Yes.
You recall that?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you share with the commission what occurred in that case and what the finding was, to the best of your ability? I mean,
has been some time ago. But as I remember generally, as ombudsman, I at one point was asked to take over responsibility for grievances, which is a separate process than complaints to the agency. A grievance occurs when an individual who's been found to have, by Children's Services, to have abused or neglected a child or caused a child to become dependent, appeals that decision to Children's Services, and the law requires that there is a process for doing that, and I was asked to be the grievance hearing officer. In this particular case, a young man grieved his finding because as an employee of the Talbert House, he was responsible on the night shift for the supervision of a group of children. And on that particular evening, there were two such employees that were on duty at night, one for one wing of the facility and one for the other wing of the facility. And they were required not to leave their posts.
And those were separating men and or the girls and boys,
yes,
right?
Young women and young men. And this particular evening, a child became sick. And through the course of the other staff member trying to minister to this particular young lady, and her friend in the facility finally admitted that the two of them had taken some drugs that had been smuggled into the facility. And at that point, of course, he became very concerned, and he phoned his supervisor, and through a series of instructions, it became clear that the supervisor wasn't going to be coming in, and that this particular employee should call someone else to get help. And finally, the EMS was called, and the child was transported to the hospital, and the young man, in order to let them into the facility, went to unlock the door. And that person
locked the door to let the life squad
to
in.
Let the EMT first responders come in. Mm-hmm. And so the Children's Services was asked. This was a customer of Children's Services. Children's Services has a contract, or had a contract at the time, with Talbert House to perform certain types of residential care for children. Children's Services was called in to take a look at that particular occurrence and found that one of the young men had been negligent in his responsibilities by leaving children unsupervised to go help in that situation. The young man was subsequently fired from his position at Talbert House, and he grieved Children's Services finding.
Did they charge him with neglect, or did they?
Yes.
So the young man who went to open the door to let the life squad in,
because
that
he
behavior
left
was found to be
neglectful.
Neglectful?
Yes. So the young man appealed or grieved that decision, and I reversed the decision because, in my opinion, Talbert House is responsible for providing appropriate means of supervision, including the staff-to-client ratio. And in my opinion, in this emergent situation, there was little choice in order to pay proper care to that particular child who was in crisis. So I've reversed that decision.
Now, do you know if they ever took that young man's name off the abuse registry?
My job as the grievance officer was to make that recommendation, and I did indeed make that recommendation, but I have no way of knowing whether or not that actually occurred.
I mean, did you ever get any feedback of what they did, or?
No.
And?
Did they reinstate the young man?
Pardon me?
Did they reinstate the young man?
No, the young man by that point had found another position, and to my knowledge, his position was not reinstated. That would have been a decision of Talbert House.
Now, did you ever bring that to the attention of the board?
I don't recall. I can't answer that question, Mr. Fox. I'd have to look at the record.
Do you recall having conversation with the director about that particular case?
Yes. I discussed all those cases with the executive director, and there was documentation that I was required to produce and give to the executive director to put in writing what my recommendations were. And then it was up to the executive director to act.
So, assuming that, I have no reason to believe not, but that was some time ago, assuming those are the facts, do you recall how the director or anyone in management acted upon being told of the circumstances, or did they have any reaction at all?
Well, if I think I would have remembered if the reaction was particularly volatile, so I would have to say it probably was not.
Was it your practice to give to the board the results of grievance hearings?
I don't recall. I do remember saying to them that I heard a certain number of grievances, but I don't recall whether or not those were in my reports to the board, as were the ombudsman reviews.
Do you recall that was there any, the Children's Services staff people who chose to file a complaint against the young man who let the life squad workers in, do you recall, was there any discussion with that person that maybe that wasn't the best judgment?
I would not be the person to have that conversation, right. Although I would have been the person to speak with those individuals to find out what actually went on that evening, what were their thoughts, what led them to the conclusion that they reached in that particular instance. But it was not within the role of the ombudsman or the grievance officer to correct or discipline staff. That was left to the executive director and the appropriate supervisors.
Well, on the general proposition where I'm headed with this, and I want to go to the general experience about that. That was a specific case. So based on what you've told me, I'm looking, what type of person would and it turned out the young lady did in fact ingest drugs.
Correct? Yes.
So you've got a staff person there worried that, my gosh, what kind of drug did she take? She's sick. She calls a supervisor. Supervisor says, not my problem, take care of it, basically. You know, I'm not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That correct?
Yes.
Other staff person in the other wing says, I can't leave my post. I can't come over and help you out.
But in fact did to help out.
And then eventually did.
Yes.
That's the person that was disciplined?
Yes.
Because left his post.
Yes.
And then went out, and then you get a life squad that comes, and they come in and tend to the girl.
Transport the young lady to the hospital, correct.
And so she goes to the hospital.
Yes.
And the reward for that response to the staff person was she gets fired and gets his name put in the child abuse registry. So if the young man wants to get a job someplace, any place around children, he's pretty much, when they check that registry, he's pretty much unemployable in that area.
Mm-hmm. I do hope that that registry was changed as a result of the grievance.
But you have no idea.
No, I don't.
What was your general experience when you made reports to the board every month?
Mike, yes. Before you get there, I just to back to this case, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Was there any follow-up as to my thinking and hearing this story? Is it, you know, A, did they find out how the drugs were brought into the facility?
Mm-hmm.
And two, did they change the policy about if they had emergencies in the future, who was going to open the door?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. I get your point. I'd like to say to you that we must separate out that Children's Services is its own unique organization, as is Talbert House, and Talbert House makes its own rules and regulations and its own operational processes. Now, certainly in the course of my investigation of this particular incident, my recommendations were that Talbert House that it be conveyed to Talbert House. And I believe I even said this when I called to talk to them and question them about the events of that particular evening, that it would behoove them to take a look at their searching. You know, when you run organizations like that, typically any material or person coming into the organization is searched for contraband such as that and for dangerous weapons and things of that nature, that they look at that process, revisit their current process, and look for gaps in their current process, and also that they revisit their current staffing patterns, because in my humble opinion, in a facility that takes care of young men and women who have mental health issues and a whole host of other things going on, it probably isn't adequate to have just two staff to supervise. But again, that's Talbert House's rules and regulations, and they have no compelling reason to listen to me.
But as far as you know, Children's Services or the board or executive director never followed up to see that these changes were made?
I don't know the answer to that question. That'd be a question for the board and the executive director.
Okay. But that's one of the things. You made a report every month?
Yes.
And presumably you raised a lot of issues that you felt were, you had two issues when you'd get a complaint or a grievance. The one was that specific case.
Yes.
And then the second was, what, if anything, did that case teach you or raise as an issue or concern that ought to be maybe looked at globally in the system, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you would make recommendations to the board about those issues that needed further study or looked and so forth. You did that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The ombudsman's job was to look at complaints that came before her or him. And so you're looking at one particular snapshot of a case in the body of many, many cases that are ongoing in Children's Services. And since all the ombudsman knows about is that particular case before her, all she can do is look at the particular instances that occurred in that case, compare that to what the current standard law or rule or regulation happens to be that applies to it, whether it be federal or state, and then make a finding and make recommendations to improve that particular, what could have improved in that particular case to have avoided if there was a finding for valid. The other thing that the ombudsman does is she looks for trends or patterns in complaints that come before her. And so when you review, let's just say I would review three cases, and now those the recommendations rise out of this is an isolated incident and into the maybe I ought to be concerned that there's something more global going on here, and we need to change the process overall. And so there would be recommendations forthcoming about the overall process.
And you made recommendations.
Yes, I did. My job was not to run the agency. My job was to say, here are some recommendations I have. And typically I would say something along the lines of, Butler County Children's Services should revisit its current policy on thus and such. And in particular, address this particular whatever the gap in service might be.
Did you make specific address it by doing XYZ, or did you just
I tried my very hardest not to do that because it was clear to me that that was the job of the executive director and her department heads. That
is what?
That was the job. How exactly to fix it, in other words, the specific pathway to take to fix it, was the responsibility of the executive director and the leadership team.
But in terms of specific actions, no one told you not to make specific recommendations.
No, nobody ever directed me not to make specific recommendations, although I was given feedback on many occasions by the board president and the board in general, and to be honest, the executive director, that my reports were of excellent quality and that they appreciated the work I did.
Now, you give these reports with recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Did you get feedback? Did you or the board get feedback that you're aware of? Well, you'd be aware of whether you did as to whatever happened. You'd say, this issue ought to be addressed. For example, the case you just discussed, was there a process in place with the board, the executive director, and you where the loop was closed, where you'd give a report in this meeting, and then later there would come back and there'd be, okay, here's what we did about those issues raised by the ombudsman. Did you get feedback on that?
No, not typically. I think it was last July or so, I had there was an opportunity to review the job description of the ombudsman. And as I recall, one of my recommendations was that there were some indicators or some standards of performance in that then current job description of the ombudsman, that the ombudsman, part of the responsibility of the ombudsman was to see that those recommendations were in fact enacted. But there was no feedback loop to be able to meet that expectation. So my suggestion to the board was that there be discussion about how is that going to happen if I'm no longer attending any meetings where I might be able to make direct observation about that. Unless somebody hands me over a corrected policy or procedure, I don't know that that's been done. I would give reports to the board in executive session. I would be thanked. Sometimes there would be questions which I would answer. But to my knowledge, I don't know that the vast majority of the things that I recommended were ever acted upon because there was no feedback to me.
Now, did the executive director, was it required to come back to the board with a report that you're aware of?
I'm not aware of.
The ombudsman recommended these 10 things and we disagree with these three. We've done this on these four. I mean, was there any feedback loop?
If there was, I wasn't privy to it. That would be a good question for the board or the executive director, who would be in a better position to know than I.
Now, on the issue of, so do you remember any of your, there were obviously some minor things that you would recommend. Not everything is a crisis, but there were some things that you considered pretty important, some recommendations that you made that would put, in your mind, unless they were addressed, they would increase the risk of harm to children. So there were clearly recommendations that you made that, that you felt had a sense of urgency and importance.
I think every recommendation that the ombudsman made had importance to the welfare of children. If it were something very minor, I probably wouldn't have included it in the report. The purpose of the ombudsman was to improve services to kids, and I thought that they were all important. But your, to your point, I think you were asking me was what about those important recommendations?
Yeah, did they... Do you recall ever having the board come back or the executive director come back in a board meeting and say, look, to discuss the follow-up to your recommendations?
No. I do recall one particular, to be able to respond positively to your question, I would say that I recall one incident where... again, a pattern was emerging where I was reviewing records and children in foster care were not getting regular dental and medical. The law requires that they periodically see a physician and that they periodically see a dentist for care. And those reports are then required to go into their record in Children's Services. And I was reviewing a great number of children in foster care's records and found that they weren't that those records documenting that they'd seen physicians, et cetera, were not in the files. And in fact, a complaint came before me by a mother, a biological mother of a child who was in foster care, complaining that her child's dentition was in poor shape and had worsened since the child went into care. So I made the recommendation that the organization develop a system so that every child, that the caseworker would know when every single child was due for their medical reviews and their dental reviews, and that it would be pursued until that child came into compliance, that child got the care they needed. I do remember that there was an email that subsequently went out from the executive director to all of the staff asking them to check their records and make sure that their children get the medical and dental care that they needed. I say that as a positive comment. However, I'd like to also comment that that wasn't exactly what I had suggested in my recommendation, is that a system be developed, not just check your records today and please be sure in the future that your children get the care. I was looking for a system to be developed.
System of verification.
Right. And to be certain that those children got the care that they needed, that it was documented in the record, and we'd be able to say without shadow of a doubt that this child always got the care they needed.
And so in that case, you did see an email follow-up, but generally, what was your experience? Was there any, what I'm getting to is that, if Derek comes to us and says, hey, we got this problem on such and such, eventually we have a conversation, either collectively or individually, say, hey, what's going on with that? How was that resolved? And what action was taken? What was your experience in that regard? Did that type of conversation between you and the executive director, you and the board, with respect to the action part take place very often?
No, if those discussions occurred, I wasn't privy to them. And again, that would be a good question for the board and for the executive director.
Now, you did have, there was another case involving a foster placement that interested me, and that goes specifically to one of the issues and problems that was illustrated or highlighted by the Marcus Faisal case. And that was, and as I recall, you don't remember what network it was in, but the issue of the 11-year-old boy that was placed in a home, the boy had a history of sex offending, and there was a molestation. How did that case come to you? What were the issues, and what do you recall were some of your recommendations regarding that?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I wish I had my records before me because I could speak much more reliably to that. But in general, the case, I believe, came before me because the biological father of the child who was
victimized,
called and asked me to look into the case. In this particular home, the biological mother and the biological father were divorced, and the biological mother had residential custody of the child. The biological mother, also by happenstance, was a foster mother for one of the child placement agencies. In this particular case, the foster child in question was a Butler County Children's Services child.
This was a network home.
It was a network home, that's correct. And,
and these were homes where, at the time and up to Marcus Faisal's tragedy, the network itself was responsible for, in effect, policing or monitoring the care. The agency did not separately go out and visit those homes, and that was not part of the system.
Well, that's not exactly the case. In the case of an agency taking responsibility for that particular child, yes, they have primary responsibility for going out and seeing to that child on a regular basis and making sure that things in the home are well and good, as expected by law, rule, and regulation. However, the placing agency, that would be in this case Children's Services, also maintains some responsibility for that child in that they are less frequently required to go out and check on that child, but they still carry them on their caseload and they're still required to know about that child and care about that child, et cetera. So I would say there is a dual responsibility with the placing agency required to take the lion's share of responsibility for that in terms of frequency of visits. I don't know that that necessarily lessens the moral responsibility. So at any rate, in this particular home, the placed child, the foster child, was himself an abused child and perpetrated a sexual abuse on the biological child of the mother. In this particular case, Children's Services was not notified about that incident and, as it turns out, other incidents that came to light until after the, well, after the incident had occurred. And so I was called to look into that particular case.
The abused child that was also the, quote, sex offender in this instance.
Yes.
Committed an act against the biological child that was younger.
Yes.
And was that reported to our Children's Services Agency?
After a time.
A few hours or?
Well, the way it was found out was because the father made, as I recall, and I wish I had these files before me, but as I recall, the way it became known was because the father called to complain to me.
So, but the network home had an obligation to report that.
Oh, yes.
As soon as they discovered
it. Sure.
And do you recall, did they?
No, they did not.
Okay. After that, do you recall what recommendations, if any, you made about as a result of that case?
Well, off the top of my head, I would say I probably recommended that, you know, when children haven't, Children's Services did the right thing, Butler County Children's Services did the right thing in communicating to the placing agency that this child had a history of perpetrating on other children. So it was known to that agency, and I must say in my course of my evaluation, it was discovered that the foster mother also was aware of this child's propensity to abuse other children, and yet the child was allowed to share a bedroom with this younger child.
Did our agency know the child was being placed with a younger child and sleeping in the same room?
Oh, yes, sure. Yes. Mm-hmm.
When our agency knew that a sex offender...
Yes, they should have known that because, you know, one...
Should have known or known?
Should have known for sure. And again, without looking at my record, right. I don't want to misspeak. I'd like to be cautious about that. But, should have known. And in addition, my recommendations would have been that every single time a worker, I don't care if it's the placing agency or the Children's Services Agency using the placing agency or the foster network, if you will, that every time a worker goes into that home, that they're required to look through the entire home, including the sleeping quarters, and asking questions about that pertain to the welfare of that particular child and frankly, the rest of the children in the home.
And you did make recommendations on that case.
Yes.
And do you recall what changes, if any, occurred as a result of this recommendation?
Again, I can't speak to that. That would be a question you would need to ask the board and the
Because at the heart of that question was, at the heart of that recommendation was that the, even though this is a network placement, that you felt that the Child Services Agency, your agency, should be aware of the circumstances of the placement, even though the network is coordinating the
Absolutely. I mean, everyone concerned about that child should be aware of the circumstance of that particular child, and I mean all the children in the home.
Now, I don't think the commission was ever, I mean, we were never told of a case like that. But what I got to understand it, your recollection is, and this is, we've asked for your reports, this would appear in one of your reports, should?
Yes.
And your recollection is that our agency did know, and in fact, did know that the child was being placed in a home where a younger child that could
Yes,
be
they would to, they would be aware of where that child was placed. That. They would be aware of where that child was placed, and they would be aware of the circumstances of that child's placement.
And did they? Did anyone ever explain to you why, despite knowing that, they would allow an 11-year-old child to sleep with a 6-year-old younger child, knowing that the 11-year-old, having been sexually abused, was acting out and abusing other children, why someone would say, yeah, that makes sense? Did anyone ever explain
No.
that to you?
No, sir.
Let me ask you about one other case, and there are scores of these, but I just want to use these to illustrate and get to a broader point that's more system-related. The Hazelbaker case that I think was in the paper here recently. Are you at all, do you recall that case at all?
Though the name sounds familiar to me, is that the case where the children were locked in their bedrooms in, as the media...
All kinds of bad things were done to them. I think it was a Xenia or a Greene County case.
And the
where it was discovered, I think there were 11 children in the home.
Yeah.
Again, it goes to the circumstances. At the time, I think some of the... This was, again, I think... a network placement. And my information about the case is hazy, but what I'm getting to, this was a situation where I'm told, and I don't know for sure, that when the kids, first off, there were 11 kids there in this home. Secondly, when the kids were placed, there were two parents, there were two people there, a man and a woman, and apparently sometime during this interlude, the man dies, so now the woman is there with 11 kids. They found out in the course of this that all kinds of bad things were happening to these kids in foster placement. Some of those kids were our kids that we placed. That happened during the 15 months that you were there. Do you recall ever doing a report on that?
I don't, and I would think I would remember that.
Do you know if an internal agency report was done? If not by you,
if there is one, I'm not aware of it. It doesn't mean that it was not.
In fact, that woman, I think, is on trial now or whatever. There's coverage to that issue right now. But how is it that, were you ever asked by the board or by the director to do a review of that? Do you remember?
No, sir. I would have acted on it.
Generally speaking, I'm amazed that if you find that children were being used as indentured servants, which in locked in, tied in chairs and all the horrible things that went on with these kids that were our foster children. And also apparently parents were complaining, trying to get somebody to listen. Hey, bad things are happening here. In fact, allegations in that case were that the foster parent was actually hurting the children and threatening them, saying that they had to, when they went for a visit with their biological parent, to make allegations against the biological parents so that they would stay in foster, threatening to hurt them if they didn't. Kids were in terrible turmoil. That to me would be a pretty big screw up inside the system, but you were the ombudsman during that time and no one asked you to review that.
Not to my recollection, and now, you know, a simple review of the record should be able to say whether I did or didn't look at that,
right.
You know.
Now, you left at some point, and did you make any recommendations at the time that you left that you recall?
With regard to children or with regard to the position?
Regard to anything. About anything. You left the agency and you had some feelings about how things should go. And
my recommendations, for one, I think that it would be of benefit in retrospect for the ombudsman's office to reside outside of Children's Services.
Why do you feel that?
Because when the position is inside of Children's Services, the and they report to people inside of the Children's Services, there it creates a dual responsibility. And it's important, I think, that there only be one concern on the mind of the ombudsman, and that is doing the right thing for children. And removing that office from within Children's Services purview removes any question about to whom that responsibility lies. And so in retrospect, I would make that recommendation.
Were there your relations with the director, did you feel a sense that, well, first off, generally speaking, your relationship with the director was pretty good?
I think the relationship with the director began very well. I did feel that she never stopped me from reporting to her the things that she always seemed sympathetic and in agreement with the recommendations, and that my reviews of the cases and in fact was very complimentary about that.
Excuse me for interrupting, and I know you've been staying a long time, and I want to give you a chance for a break in a moment, but I don't want to draw this out any further than we have to, but you would review any recommendation you made to the board first went to the executive director, correct?
Oh, yes, the day before.
And you had an opportunity to talk to her about
the board. Yes. There were some exceptions, of course, they were few and far between when she wasn't available, but
right.
Yes. We were talking about recommendations, is that correct?
Yeah, you would go through, we were talking about why independent and your relationship with the director,
right.
Was it, you said it started out pretty good.
Yeah, but I do believe towards the end of my tenure there that, for some reason she came to believe that I was not in support of her and specifically the board, or subsequently the board put restrictions on where I could be within the organization and what my role would be within the organization.
What kind of restrictions?
Well, for instance, not being permitted to attend management meetings and those kinds of things.
Now, but that part of that was because you had asked her to help you learn to become a potential director in the future, right?
Well, I had asked to be mentored in Children's Services, in the operations of Children's Services, and
wanted to teach you more about the system.
Correct, yeah. Made the mistake in retrospect of mentioning to her, should she ever decide to leave the organization, I'd like to be in a position to be knowledgeable enough to competently apply for the position, believing that I'd found some fulfillment in the organization and working with the children. It was in my personal values and professional values, I believe, and have always been my driver to taking care of kids and families. And in retrospect, I believe she found that. Well, you'd have to ask her how she found it, but I interpreted
but
that she.
Did your relationship
I felt that our relation, the nature of our relationship changed.
She thought you wanted her job.
I can surmise that. You'd have to ask her.
Now, by and large, what. As we start this review, what types of questions, well, before I get to that, what, overall, the board, I think in earnest and in honest good faith, believes they pretty much get the good, bad, and the ugly information about what's really going on in the agency. Do you have a sense, just from what you observed, as to how, and not to say that they're failing in any place, but if you're just sitting there observing what you observed, what's your sense of how well informed? What did they really know what was going on? And if so, I mean, we kind of like to know what's going on in county agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't function as a commission unless we get information. And we need bad information as well as good information. We want both. We want to celebrate our successes and we want to learn from our failures.
Mm-hmm.
In just a sense, can you give us a sense of just what you observed as to how well-informed is the board, not because they didn't want to be or because they deliberately built barriers, but how well-informed were they about what was going on?
Well, boards in general only know what those who report to them pass on to them. And there are, it's been my experience as members of boards, that that there are two ways in which that is done. Sometimes it's done officially, in other words, in the course of a meeting such as this. And then there are meetings that happen between the executive director of the board and usually the president of the board or the executive committee of the board. And there are other conversations that happen in the context of that discussion. And of course, I was not privy to those particular meetings. And so I have no way of reliably saying to you that the board was not fully informed about things, you know, and I'd even have to know what the particular thing was. I could only observe what happened during public meetings. While I wouldn't say I directly observed any miscommunication to the board, I'm concerned that things were not always fully discussed, and I don't care whether they were done in a public meeting or they were done privately, because there are just some things that, you know, legal matters, et cetera, that are best done within the context of a private discussion, in my opinion. And I'd also like to point out that, you know, the board is comprised, I believe, of people who care very much about families and kids. There's not one iota of doubt in my mind that every single one of those board members is personally committed to the welfare of kids and families. But they're lay folks, and by and large are not child welfare individuals. And so that's not their academic or experiential background. And so they are left often to determine what is the meaning of what has been said to me or what this data has been presented to me. And I'm not convinced that always they were given the information they needed in order to make good decisions, or the information that was presented to them was not given the opportunity to be thoroughly discussed and pointed out. You know, the ombudsman's reports are not the only source of information about opportunities for improvement within the organization. In fact, most organizations have some type of quality improvement division. I remember that there was a particular spreadsheet developed that contained information that was gleaned from semi-annual reviews of records for children, and that there were issues that would, we hope, that was the whole design of the review, was to bring issues to the forefront. Of course, the board would see this particular spreadsheet, but I'm not always convinced that they understood exactly what they were looking at. And there, I think, some degree of communication between the board and those responsible leadership around what does this data mean, where might we do a better job, and what might that better job look like. And I'm not always convinced that that kind of discussion goes on, not just with regard to that particular incident or for instance or example, but in other ways as well.
But there were very few board meetings where you observed a discussion about specific or recommendations on issues you had made.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't come back to you and say, gee, here's what we've done about this.
No, usually they did not. Now, another instance is coming to my mind. I was asked to facilitate, in other words, be the facilitator of a group of people to look at red flag cases. Red flag cases would be those referrals into children's services that meet a certain criteria that cause you to be more concerned than you might otherwise be. And it's kind of a way of triaging what comes into children's services and deciding what is really important to get out there right away and look at. And in this group, there was a lot of discussion around changing the processes associated with red flag. And I recall very vividly that there were recommendations that came from the director of intake at the time. And one of those was to increase the frequency with which those children were seen. And the other that comes to mind is that the requirement that those children be seen before the day was out. And that was resisted. You know, it was a multidisciplinary team or a cross-functional team. That is, there were staff and administrators and others who sat on that team. And the staff were quite resistant of those two particular recommendations because if they were working with their current resources, that is the same number of staff, they felt it would be very difficult to meet that standard. And if something went wrong, then they would be held accountable for that.
Did that bubble up to the board?
It did indeed. It became quite a hot topic, as I recall. And the group took their recommendation, or the director took the intake director, I should say, took the recommendations to the board, and there was a somewhat heated discussion about it. And in the end, the board decided not to put those two recommendations into place. And again, you'd have to ask the board for the rationale for that.
As we go into this review committee, what issues should we be looking at? You were saying here's the way I think it ought to be designed. I mean, here are the things that you can look at to discover ways to improve the workings of the agency. Any advice for us?
Well, the one would be to ask the people who are in the agency and who have previously been in the agency what their recommendations for improvement might be within the agency. Where would there be gaps, for instance? Most of us care a great deal about families and kids, and frankly, most of us care a great deal about the agency. I think its mission is a noble one. And I believe that everybody who goes to work there every day tries their darndest to do a good job. I really do. So most of us don't have some axe to grind or some kind of, you know, bad feeling we hold for children's services. Most of us simply want to see the processes improved. And so one is to ask people who are currently there and people who have recently gone. Another would be that there are various and sundry quality reports that are produced, not just the ombudsman as one portion of quality improvement, but there are other quality measures that are examined within the organization. And it's an opportunity to take those various sources of data, analyze them, and say, what do we see here? Where are our trends and opportunities for improvement in the processes that we're responsible for? And then another is to make sure you've got some really good minds there who can think to root cause. It's not enough just to ask why. You need to keep asking why until you get to the root cause for certain things. And so I would make those three recommendations primarily. And then I'd ask you to think as the commissioners very carefully about what will you do with that information. Where will the work of that group, that product of that group, go? And how will you monitor that for results?
I look at the Hazel Baker case, as I'd asked the current ombudsman. He's not done a report on that, and you don't recall doing one.
I don't, and again, it'd be best if you would reference the records.
The drug overdose case.
Mm-hmm.
With the Talbert House child,
mm-hmm.
The sex offender.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember if the sex offender case, was that ever included in a report to the board?
Oh, I'm sure it was because it came before the ombudsman.
Okay.
And I mentioned to you also the report that was withheld from me for a time, and if...
There was a report withheld
from you? Remember I said earlier in my discussion, you asked if there was ever a time when I didn't have access to information, and I replied, yes, there was, and I actually had to go to the board president to get that report made to me.
Did they ever tell you why they didn't want you to have it?
No.
And who denied that, if you recall?
I do recall. I am loath to say names, but of course one of them was the executive director when it wasn't forthcoming from a staff member. I went to the executive
director. Even after the executive director knew you needed it?
Yes, then it didn't come, and I spoke with the board president about it, and then the board president caused action to occur.
And the board president never, ever, ever in any way, directly or indirectly, implied that you should not bring things to the board.
No, Reverend Sloan has been very vocal about he wants to know that things are going on.
Did you ever feel a sense in terms of the culture of the agency that if you did bring things to the board that the director didn't like or whatever, that you would have this problem with, quote, not being loyal to the director and therefore getting a sense of conflict in that regard?
I would say yes. Despite that, recommendations still came forward, and the board still heard them.
Now, one last thing, and then I'll turn over to my colleagues, and that is your sense, back to this issue of information flow. The board really believes they're getting it. One of the recommendations you made is that it would improve the information flow if the ombudsman were outside of the agency, beholden to or hired by someone other than the board or the agency, yet reporting to the board. Is that correct?
Yes.
And overall, would you describe the information flow to the board? You think that's adequate or inadequate now?
Well, I can't say now whether the information
flow there was that adequate
with regard to my work or with regard
just
to the work
overall,
of the organization.
You've been on boards. You mentioned
and again, I can only report on what was said during the public portion of the board meetings. I can't say what was communicated to the board in its other official capacities of listening to the organization. So I have only a portion that I can tell you about. So and in that particular portion, I would say probably not, and I don't know that it was malicious in its intent. I think it's a combination of knowing what's important to tell the board and in the board understanding what's being shared with them.
Right. And that's a matter of those inside educating and communicating and basically explaining.
Yes. And I think that goes both ways. I think that if the board doesn't know or understand something, they have obligations to ask questions or request information about things. And it has to do with the agency itself saying, you probably ought to know about this, or let me teach you more about so that you can understand when I tell you X, Y, or Z is happening.
Thank you. Mr. President, I don't
have any other questions. Thank you very much, Sherry. And I'd like to just to ask you, would you be willing, if the chair of the task force review would ask for a report from you, or a written report of recommendations, some of the things that you've told us today, would you be willing to do that?
I'd be happy to support the work group any way I can.
Okay.
Mr. President?
Yes.
I would like to ask her to be on the task force with her previous experience and some of the things that she's witnessed and observed, and I think she would be good for the board. She would know what kind of questions to ask since she's been on the board for over in this position for over a year. That would be my recommendation. I know we're going to have exit polls, not polls, but exit interviews, et cetera. But with what I've seen here, I think she'd be good to know what questions to ask.
Mr. Furman, I'd like the commission to consider this, though. It's not that I'm unwilling to serve. You know that. I think I've bent over backwards to serve my county in a number of capacities. But do think carefully about how it's important that Children's Services be able to receive this information and do it in a spirit of willingness. And I think if I were appointed as a member of that particular group, that there would be some people who would say that I'm not an objective individual, that I should therefore not be on that particular group. And I would hate for the work of that group, which I have confidence is going to be good work, to be called into question for a reason such as that. Whether it's true or, you know, perceptions are perceptions. So you may want to consider that before you make a decision
again,
about
I
that.
I still think that you would have a wealth of knowledge, whether you're part of the board or being asked for your observations and recommendations, that you would be invaluable as this review committee goes forward. So
but you're willing to work with them.
Oh, absolutely. I'm willing to support them any way that I can.
I think what struck me about this information, and I really appreciate you coming in. I know it was because anyone that's been in her position, I know how sensitive she is, and rightfully so. You're looking back, and you're offering observations, and inevitably, in organizations, any organization, when you look back and say, well, here's what I think should have or could have or would have happened, you expose yourself to attack from those inside that say, well, you've got an axe to grind. And I think that I appreciate you having the courage to come here today and share some information, because you have a rare glimpse of the inside of the workings of this agency. And the things that strike me is how do we build systems? And I've been trying to do this as I started. I'll end where I started. At the very beginning of my venture into this issue 20 years ago, it was about information. How, when you had a caseworker knock on the door on Tiffany Hubbard and be told that the child's upstairs sleeping, and the caseworker walk away, and in fact the child was upstairs dying, and you find out, you ask yourself, how can we create a system that gets information to the right people at the right time so kids can be helped and risk to them can be lowered and families can be supported when the opportunity presents itself? And the challenge to this has always been getting information to the right people at the right time. And the board, and I've talked to Johnny, Pastor Sloan, on many occasions, and he is he wants this information, but somehow the structure internally, I think it's cultural. I mean, there's a culture there that, you know, from my, and you may or may not want to comment on this, but it's almost hostile to information. In other words, you got to make sure the type of information you're moving through the system doesn't upset somebody. And in my conversations with staff people, there's always this kind of political calculus that I know I want to make this recommendation. I think it'll be right for kids, but I also want to, I know there's a supervisory position coming up, and I don't want to be put into the category that I'm not loyal, I'm not a, quote, team player. And the desire to be a team player at times means that items and issues that ought to be addressed somehow get swept aside. And how do we create, you know, when you have a Hazelbaker case, and I would encourage my colleagues to look at that case and get the facts. And I don't know, and I won't put them on the spot now, but I don't know if that case was ever reviewed by anyone. But that is a pretty bad occurrence. And if that doesn't go to the board, if a child overdose case doesn't go to the board, if placing a sex offender in the home where another younger child gets sex offended, A, goes to the board, and then you wonder, well, if there was an issue raised about network home placements and the importance of having more information about the appropriateness of those placements as occurred in the 11-year-old sex offender, why didn't that, or how was it that didn't translate into policy changes that would enable us to get out front of the placement in the Marcus Faisal case that would have resulted in more oversight, and it took Marcus Faisal's death for the agency to rightfully decide, okay, now we're going to change the policy. Now we're going to say that the agency will actually take an independent review of these homes and independent of the networks, not just take their word for it, but we will go in and actively